TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
10-5, touchdown!
All the time. A division of Bell Media. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at tsn.ca/Winnipeg, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my frenemies, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We have a jam-packed 3 hours ahead for you this afternoon.
Frenemies?
Frenemies. It really works quite well sometimes. Well,
that's a dated reference.
Dated to what?
When your birth, 1964.
Exactly why we're frenemies. Jam-packed show in store for you this afternoon, coming up in about 30 minutes' time from the Tennessean in Nashville. Josh Cooper is going to join us a little bit later on in the show. James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen is going to join us. Drew Remenda, San Jose Sharks color commentator, is going to join us. And we are hoping and expect to be able to touch base with somebody from the Brandon Wheat Kings organization ahead of their game in Winnipeg tomorrow. Against the Calgary Hitmen, best in the Western Hockey League playoff.
Drew, the Wheaties lost last night. They won game one. That series is tied up. I'm really pumped up that the Wheat Kings and Hitmen are going to be playing at the MTS Center. They played last year. Was it last year or 2 years ago? One of the two, but there's obviously the Keystone Winter Fair in Brandon. But
I went last year to game three, I think.
Was it last year?
It was Lethbridge, I think, and Brandon. Yeah. I think
Lethbridge. Medicine Hat?
Medicine Hat, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, the Wheat Kings will be here tomorrow, Tuesday, and Thursday, of course, playing games 3, 4, and 5 of their Western Hockey League playoffs. So we'll touch base with somebody from the Brandon Wheat Kings a little bit later on in the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want your tweets. If it's a good enough tweet, maybe we'll give you a prize. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com.
I got a hate tweet yesterday.
I apologized for it. I really didn't mean what I wrote, but you know, sometimes you piss me off.
It was a great hate tweet because a guy hate tweeted me after I wrote about, you know, needing perspective for where the Jets were in the standings. You know, they were as close to the eighth spot as they were to the second last spot. And then somebody wrote me at the end of the night. I wrote perspective, and I wrote, you know, 5 points out of here, but 5 points out of second last.
You know, tempering expectations and really giving a full picture of what the playoff scenario looks like.
This guy writes me at like 11 o'clock, like perspective. You're an idiot. Of course, you're, without the apostrophe R-E.
Y-O-U-R as opposed to Y-O-U apostrophe.
So I retweeted it, but then he deleted it.
How degrading is it when someone sends you an email or a text message, telling you you're an idiot, but they don't put the proper punctuation in? It's like, really? Am I the idiot?
You can call me an idiot if you spell it right. You can call me whatever you want.
Right. Just use proper punctuation. Mm-hmm. Use your commas. Use your periods. Use capitalization. Use everything, but if you don't, you have no credibility, do you?
I don't know. Well, we can discuss that a little bit later on in the Illegal Curve Grammar Hour, which is coming up at the end of the show tonight. But why don't we talk about the Winnipeg Jets, who at about...
Drew, when you're on the show, it's a grandpa hour.
That was good. At about 7:15 last night, the Winnipeg Jets probably did not have a playoff pulse.
That's true.
And then fast forward about 90 minutes after that, and somehow the Winnipeg Jets playoff pulse beats on. It's beating a little bit slowly, but they are still in it. You know, like we said, the obituaries were being written yesterday evening, and they managed to come back with that remarkable four unanswered goals to win 4-3 over Washington
in
overtime.
I'll let Ezzy get in here, but quickly, I mean, the most amazing part. Well, first of all, this team doesn't quit, and it hasn't all year. I mean, it's been a testament to them, to coaching and the players, both.
Yeah.
But if you were coming into the season and you'd say that basically the season's on the line, you're down 3-0 in the biggest game of the year, and the line that does it for you is what I'm calling the waivers line. Stapleton, Maxwell, and Mahacek, all three guys have been on waivers this year.
Yeah.
Placed on waivers by the Jets, all three. And those guys carry you back into this unpredictable comeback. It's really a great story.
Remus had a good name for the line in his morning papers, and I don't know if it was intentional or unintentional. The Mach 3 line.
I think that was intentional.
I thought that was also a good line, but I like the waivers line because, you know what? What a win for the Jets last night. Remus and I were watching the game at the cheer, and they went down 3-0, and then it was 3-2 after two periods. But even in that third period when they outshot the Capitals, I believe at one point it was 15-16-0.
It was a that third period was as dominant a period as the Jets. I know they've dominated. I think Florida, they scored like 5 goals in the third period. That was as dominant. That's on the road. You don't have the matchups you want. That was the most dominant period the Jets have played with the season on the line. I was very impressed by the way they played. Pavlik had no shots against.
2 shots on goal in the entire third period.
And they outchanced them, but not only did they outchance them, because sometimes guys you get outchanced them, you just get chances in the flow of the game. The possession numbers, and NHL doesn't keep track of this anymore. They used to, but the possession numbers had to have been something like 14 minutes to 6 in that period. They were controlling the puck. They were skating hard. I thought Blake Wheeler was motoring all night. And they didn't, you know, that line wasn't great, but he was, the intensity was there. And you could see the want. I thought Alexander Bremestrov played a solid game. I thought he didn't get enough credit for the turnover he created on the winning goal in the offensive zone. You know, he was a very aware defensive player. And my God, I mean, you can't get the puck off Dustin Byfuglien.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
It's funny you mentioned Byfuglien. There's a few things that I noticed about that game, and it was a very good hockey game.
It was.
It started off not very well for the Jets, but obviously, Richie, the story is you get three goals from your fourth line. Spencer Mrazek, wow. Mahochik, sorry. His first NHL goal, how excited did he look?
He looked over the moon thrilled.
Three and a half minutes.
I can tell you, when we went, sorry to interrupt, Jesse, when we went, to training camp and we were watching some of the practices before the team, really anybody knew the team. And I can tell you that from people we were talking to, the Jets had high hopes for Mahochik. I think they were hoping that he would make the team out of camp. Didn't have the best camp. But up and down, but we at this show, we've talked about how much we liked him. Last week we said they should call him up. They've called him up. He's been a pleasant surprise. This is about the time that he should be coming, that pleasant surprise. He's been out, draft a few years now. Yep. And it's been a really nice addition. To me, he's been far better than Eric Fehr whenever he's had the opportunity. Even when Fehr is healthy, I think Mahochik should draw in there. And it's something to build on. Now, I think the craziest part about the 3-2 goal is you're up 3-2, and now you deserve to tie that game at least, but it's three and a half minutes left, whatever it was. The Jets actually lose the draw on that tying goal. And then the hard work to get the puck over to Mahochik by Maxwell. I mean, Stapleton loses the draw. Maxwell gets in there. And that's an intensity factor. Because Maxwell's job there is to pressure the puck as the left winger. That's a job in terms of the Jet system. That's his job. And he jumped him quick, the center, before the puck even got back to the defenseman. And he gets in there. Mahochik goes to the net and puts the puck in. Maxwell scored a beauty. First goal to the spinorama. Yep. He was tremendous yesterday, and don't expect this from him going forward, but give him due credit for what he did yesterday. I mean, Ben Maxwell essentially saved the season because he doesn't make that play. Mahochik doesn't get that goal.
Mahochik's goal was huge, and we haven't even really been talking that much about Timmy Stapleton's overtime winner.
Also,
but I go back to when the score was 3-1, Richie, you mentioned Maxwell got the goal, and then what happens? Right off the faceoff, Jimmy Slater and Brooks Lake fight, and Jimmy Slater wins that fight. And a little bit later in the second period, what happens on Brian Little's goal? And I don't think people notice this enough. If you go back and you look at the goal, what happens? Toby Enstrom takes the shot from the point. Who's battling in front? Andrew Ladd, right in front of the net, battling with, I believe it was...
Jeff Schultz.
I was going to say Carlson, but I was wrong. So it was Jeff Schultz. Andrew Ladd is battling with Schultz in front of the net.
Pretty sure it was Schultz.
Schultz takes out Ladd. Puck comes right to Brian Little.
Absolutely.
What about Brian Little? I mean, the guy's, how many goals does that guy have in the last 2 weeks? I mean, you got to give him credit. Brian Little has been dogged by inconsistency all year on that top line. The one guy.
I just don't think he's that good, but I thought he played, was skating really well yesterday.
But hey, he's getting goals at opportune times. And really, the story of that game is really the fourth line.
The story of the last couple of games, though.
It really is.
Jimmy Slater. There's studies on the gym, the fighting and after fighting. I don't think there's a boost in production, really, for the team after a fight. There's no real boost in production for a team. Having said that, I would hazard to guess that a large portion of those fights are fighters. If Chris Thorburn gets in that fight,
if two fighters fight, there's no big boost.
I always contested, like a guy like Ginla or a guy like Slater. When these guys drop the gloves, they drop them so rarely. It has a symbolic meaning.
Well, look who he's fighting. He's fighting the captain of the Capitals, Brooks Lake.
The Jets, yeah.
Jim Slater's second career fight.
Two things came to mind. A, when I watched that, I said, I love Jimmy Slater. I mean, face-offs, works hard, love the guy.
GSP.
The guy the Jets should bring back. Second thing I thought was, guy missed half a year from a concussion last year. Yeah. This is a risky maneuver.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's always a risky maneuver. I mean, just playing is probably a risky maneuver to some degree. But you
missed 40 games last year.
Yeah, he missed a huge portion of last year with that concussion. I mean, he's probably going to be... I think he should be the Jets Masterton nominee.
He was last year, actually.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
We mentioned that on air last week. Jim Slater came back from a concussion in the second half, or early first half, actually, in the second half of last year, and he was the nominee. Richie and I were talking about this. It might be Eric Fair this year. Came back from the shoulder surgery. But... it's weird that the Bill Masterton Trophy.
Well, we'll talk about the Bill Masterton.
Well, it's funny. The teams announce their nominees kind of sporadically.
The Jets are the only... I think there's two teams that haven't announced it. It's the Jets and somebody else. I can't remember who the other team is, but it's just the last two to announce it. Let's ask this one. I mean, Richie, you and I were discussing this last night. Ezzy, I assume you might have been discussing with Remus at the cheer last night. What was Andrew Ladd doing on that first goal? On the Capitals' first goal of the game.
You have to be excited if you're a Jets fan by the comeback and the heart and soul. You have to be a little bit worried about the fact that it was the biggest game of the year and the Jets spotted Washington 3 goals. And on that first goal, the Jason Chimera goal, Dustin Byfuglien rushes the puck. Now, it wasn't a rush.
It wasn't a terrible rush for him to take.
It was a predictable rush. There's a couple of issues with the Blake Wheeler trying to dangle through the other team's defense when Byfuglien's up on the play. You want to probably go wide and just protect the puck a little bit more. Brian Little jumps in too far in the offensive zone. But the biggest issue is this. Now, you can't see. We're not at the game. But you couldn't really see from the camera angle. Either Andrew Ladd was last man back the whole time, or he was coming off the bench. In any event, as the last man back, you can't skate in a direct line at the opposing team. That was your side. You're the right side. You're coming for the right side defenseman.
He was covering for Byfuglien, who was pinching.
And it was a blown assignment. And you know what? When he contributed to the goal coming back, he needed to because he gave that. He was one of the reasons that one was given up. You can't do that.
Even more so than not do. Like, it wasn't like he was coming into, you know, maybe there was a loose puck and he thought he had a chance at it. He just sort of made a beeline straight deep into the capital zone.
I speculated with you that he came off the bench. If he did come off the bench, that means he wasn't watching the play.
Because, like, I mean, you watch the game, and all of a sudden you see this blur of Andrew Ladd coming from off-screen and making a beeline in, and you're right, he was the last. He had the defensive responsibility while Byfuglien was up pinching. These guys have played with Byfuglien for 80 games now.
And Lapp out in Chicago.
You know,
I mean,
right, they know these. They know him. You know, that they know when he's going to pinch, that somebody's got to cover for him. And Ladd just... you know, it wasn't the time. You didn't need to get the first goal that desperately. It wasn't, you know, a minute to go in the game and you need to throw everything at it. Yep. It was just a bizarre play. You watched it and you go back and watch it again. And you're thinking to yourself, where's he going? What's going through his brain that's the decision he's making?
It's a poor read.
Poor read is a nice way to... Yeah, he made up for it and didn't end up, you know, hurting them too terribly. But it was a really bizarre play to watch,
you know,
as it unfolds.
Matt Hendricks played more last night than Alexander Ovechkin.
Did he lead them in ice time?
Whatever it is. I mean, Dale Hunter's got to... you know, if he's doing that, he's got to...
It's not like Ovechkin... Ovechkin was dominant in the first period.
He had two goals, and Matt Hendricks has been a staple of the team as well, and he's a grinding player, but
come on.
Fundamentally, when a grinder is getting more minutes than Alexander Ovechkin, that's a problem.
If you tell the Jets, you can either play Matt Hendricks more often, you're going to play against Matt Hendricks, or you're going to play against Alex Ovechkin.
The Capitals are a mess.
Alexander Ovechkin was... missing in action in the third period.
The entire Caps were missing in action in the third period. It wasn't just Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah, they didn't show.
They didn't show up.
That team's never had a backbone. Let's be real here, guys.
If you're losing...
Mike Green coming back from injury. Mike Green bailed out in a hit in the... I don't know, I think it was in the third period there. He went back on the puck and just bailed out in a hit. And I thought to myself, you know, these are the guys that you're banking on.
See, it's funny, Drew. I want to mention something. I know we're going to go for break pretty soon.
Right, yeah, right away.
You know, everyone's been talking about how the Jets need the Sabres to lose and they need the Capitals to lose and how this was a bigger game for the Jets. And the Capitals are in a better position because they have more regulation wins. The Capitals needed to win that game yesterday. The Capitals are in eighth place right now. The Jets are chasing them. The Capitals needed that game just as much as the Jets did.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
Of course they did.
I don't think they did, but when you're up 3-0 and you can eliminate the Jets and you're up 3-0 on home ice, That is a loss that's probably going to stick with you for a little while.
Jets lose and the game's over. The season's over. Washington loses and they did
right there. I realize that the Jets need the points more, but just that...
Ovechkin, 18 minutes. 18 minutes. Matt Hendricks, 20. Wow, that's ridiculous. Dale Hunter's got to look in the mirror.
Dale Hunter is... I'm not sure what his role there is right now.
Semin,
I know he's head coach, but I don't know what his job description is.
Semin, 60 minutes. Jay Beagle, 20 minutes. Come on.
Well, you're playing. You're not playing your talented guys.
I mean, real.
And it's not like they didn't show up. It's not like the Jets were up 3-0 after, you know, after 25 minutes in the game.
That's a disgrace.
Well, that's a bad coaching job, is what it is.
Yeah.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to go through the Eastern Conference playoff race, look at the week ahead, all that good stuff. Lots more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Jets Predators gets underway at 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3. Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. Let's look at the Eastern Conference playoff race, the bottom, the race for 8th, really, there. It's, you know, there's a lot of teams that are still in it, conceivably. I mean, Carolina's conceivably in it, but they're not.
Toronto's conceivably still in it.
Yeah, it's Washington, Buffalo, and Winnipeg. I don't think Ottawa's going to fall back enough to be really in danger. I mean, they're struggling. And, you know, if the Jets can do things, if the Jets can win tonight and Ottawa loses tonight, then Monday's game against Ottawa becomes all the more important.
Could tie.
No, can't tie. They're 6 points back of...
They can come within two. Yeah.
So it's close. But, I mean, I don't think Ottawa's going to... That would be a pretty good tank for Ottawa in the last 7 games of the season right now. What you have is, I mean, you got Washington there in eighth by virtue of having more regulation wins than the Buffalo Sabres.
And they'll continue to have that.
Yeah. Buffalo's... any tiebreakers, Washington's going to win. They have 35 regulation wins. Everybody else is further than that. It's going to come down to... And you look at the schedules for this coming week. Jets fans have become Minnesota Wild fans for today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
The Wild play Buffalo tonight, then the Wild play in Washington tomorrow. Then later on in the week, Buffalo plays at Washington, which is, you know, but the Jets are hoping against hope that that's not a 3-point game that night.
The problem, of course, I tweeted about this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
A certain amount of wins each team can have, there's going to be an automatic win in that game.
Right.
So.
Yep. And the thing, looking ahead, let's be serious here. Like you said, Drew, this is a three-team race between the Sabres, Capitals, and Jets. And you look at the three schedules, and the Jets have the most important game of their season now. The new most important game of their season.
Every game of their season.
Every game now is the most important game, but it's the new important game of the season tonight against the Predators. And then...
Is there any good reason why we think they will beat the Predators?
Hold on.
Based on talent?
Jets, the Jets don't win back-to-back games. They're going into Nashville with travel. A team that's, you know, played a poor performance the other night. Go ahead, Oz.
So going back to the three teams and their schedules, like Richie just said, it's going to be tough for the Jets to win that game tonight against the Predators, second game of back-to-backs. And then on Monday you're coming back, you've got Ottawa. You've got the Rangers on Wednesday, and then you're going on the road for 4 games, starting with next Friday against Carolina, starting a first game of a back-to-back. But if you look at the three teams, I would say that the Sabres have the easiest schedule. You've got the Wild tonight at home, and then on Tuesday you've got the Capitals. You're on the road. And then you've got next weekend a home-and-home.
No.
Pardon me.
You got Pittsburgh on Friday.
No, next weekend you do have a home-and-home. It's not back-to-back. But the Sabres and the Leafs have
a home and home.
It is a home and home.
I know it is, but it's not a conceivable back-to-back home and go. You're forgetting the Pittsburgh game, though. They have Minnesota. They have Minnesota tonight. They have Minnesota tonight. They have Washington on Tuesday. Those are the games that Washington and Buffalo both have that are similar games. They play because Washington plays Minnesota tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Then Buffalo next week has Pittsburgh and Toronto. Washington, mind you, has Boston and Montreal. I mean, you know, I'd rather play. At some point in time, talent is going to win out. Talent and backbone, like you said. Washington has no backbone whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the first sign of adversity.
They buckle.
They buckle.
They have for years now.
I know. It's really become their hallmark.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if I was a betting man, it's Buffalo's playoff spot to lose.
We said that weeks ago.
I know we have. But, I mean, and you look at the schedule. Buffalo does not have the hardest schedule, especially going into April. They have Toronto like on those two games, like you said. Then they finish difficult. They finish at Philly and at Boston.
But you don't know how difficult that would be. What if Boston and Philly are locked into playoff spots?
Exactly right. They could
They rest a couple of their guys.
Yeah, that could very well be.
Especially with a guy like Tim Thomas, who's going to be tired because no Tuukka Rask. They throw in Marty Turco. You might as well throw in Mr. Siv.
True.
And guys, I know that right now we're looking at the three teams and their schedules, and you know, tonight's game, second game of a back-to-back, the Jets haven't been good in the second game of back-to-backs. But if you bear with me here, if the Jets are able to beat the Nashville Predators tonight, And you go home, then you've got the Ottawa Senators and the New York Rangers. After that, the road trip they're going to go on, you've got three winnable games out of those four, as far as I'm concerned.
I think you have more than three. I would feel confident, too,
because the Jets have played so well on the road this year.
I'm just saying, Richie, if they're able to pull out a win tonight against the Predators.
If.
Look,
there's too many ifs here, guys.
Yeah, well, of course there's a lot of ifs. We're looking at the schedule. I mean, you look at the Jets in the last five games of the season. They play Carolina. They play Tampa.
Are they going to beat Nashville or the Rangers? They played New York this year three times. They've scored one goal.
Yeah.
But Marty Biron in two of those three games. He might even play again. Because you can tell how much the Jets are thought of around the league by how many teams start their backups against them.
So I'm just saying,
do they beat Nashville or New York? Likely.
Probably not. Based on talent and based on...
Are they going to win five of those six games on the road?
Probably not. Could they? Yeah, but their record on the road does not indicate that that's likely. The Jets have to steal one of Nashville or the Rangers. And the reason why they have to steal one of Nashville or the Rangers
and then still play way above their head on the road
is because they hurt themselves beyond words last Sunday against Carolina, losing to Carolina at home.
Absolutely.
You know that, and that's how do you counteract that? By stealing a game you're not supposed to win.
They hurt themselves against Carolina, but they've hurt themselves all year by not being good on the road. Well, it's not just one game that they've hurt themselves on.
No, but it's the most recent game. If they beat Carolina, Last Saturday we were on the air here and we said, look, assuming they beat Carolina, it's not the end of the world if they lose to Pittsburgh and Nashville on that road trip but beat Washington.
I know what you're saying. That game, this is the reality. A lot of people are going to look, because it's a home game, and you have to win the home games. And I know people are going to look at that game if the Jets don't end up making the playoffs. But my argument will also be, what if they beat the Hurricanes and they lose to the Capitals last night? It washes. I'm just playing the devil's advocate.
Go back to last Saturday on this program. The three of us sat around this table like we're doing right now and said, the Jets, you have to figure they're going to beat Carolina, right? And then if they beat Washington like they ended up doing, you're okay if they lose the games they're expected to lose against Pittsburgh and Nashville.
They still are losing that tiebreaker against Washington, too.
I know they're losing that tiebreaker. But once they lost to Carolina last Sunday, it meant they have to steal one of the Pittsburgh or Nashville games.
That's right.
And they got blown out by Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that wasn't much of a game.
And so now the option is they have to steal the Predators game. Because you were saying they're going to win the games on home ice, but they lost.
You need to get to 90.
Well, yeah, that is six wins. That's the magical number now. It was, I believe, 92 or 93 last year, so it's 90 points this year.
You have to get a 90,
which is 6-2.
And you don't have the tiebreaker against Washington, so they can't have 90. They have to get 89 at the most. They have to get 7 points out of seven games at the most. Okay, 7 out of 7. And we can talk about the comeback yesterday, and it was a great comeback and showed a lot of heart. Still gave Washington a point.
Yeah, no argument. Look.
Now, Buffalo, they have a tiebreaker.
Funny, I would say Washington gave the Jets a point the way they were up 3-0.
Buffalo can get 90 because the Jets have the tiebreaker with Buffalo because of the regulation and overtime wins.
Right.
Right? So that would mean Buffalo needs 9 points in the Jets seven games.
The Jets have to finish ahead of Washington.
Mm-hmm. Actually, 5 points behind Washington with 8 and 7 games to go, respectively. That's a big margin. Scott O'Neill came here in the trade deadline show and said 6 points is massive in the league.
Sure, because everybody gets a point for showing up.
Well, Ezzy and I were joking at Starbucks, and you as well, Drew. You know, one team loses three games in a row, they go from second to eighth, and they're worried about the playoffs.
The Los Angeles Kings.
This is Gary Bettman's 10th place
to third place in I think, 2 days. You know, it's funny. You talk about last night's game, and last night's game was one of the most exciting games of the year, and there have been so many. And you talk about intestinal fortitude and what that showed that the Jets could come back down 3-0. Well, this is another game. It's one of those games where all you can do is win, or you put yourselves in a situation where you're essentially out of the playoffs. If you're down 4 or 5 points, with 7 games left, and 4 of those games are on the road, you're making yourself, a long shot to get into the playoffs. So
Vander Kane is the key tonight, because they're going to match up Suter and Weber against that top line, and the Jets aren't going to get any matchups that they want. And you can't count on that fourth line again. Jokes aside, GST line is not going to give you much offense, likely.
It's not the GST line right now.
Sorry, the MSG line. So if you get... Sorry, Ezzy. If you get...
Copyright 2011.
It's the second line there of, Bermistrov and Kane, those two guys, more particularly Wellwood up there, if they throw Stapleton, whoever up there.
Evander Kane to me is the key player tonight. If he performs, the Jets have a chance. If he doesn't, I think the Jets lose.
Didn't have his best game last night.
Is he better than the defensive pair, than Nashville's second defensive pair?
Not necessarily, but I mean, speed is a factor, right, Drew?
Yeah.
Guys like Kevin Klein, guys like Kyle Gill aren't as good skaters as Evander Kane. I'm just saying he's going to have more opportunity than the other guys are.
Drew, you know, to answer your question, I think Evander Kane has the opportunity when he's not going up against the super duo of Weber and Suter. But, you know, we'll talk to Josh Cooper coming up. But Hal Gill is a nice little acquisition there. Well, I shouldn't say little.
He's a big acquisition, literally and figuratively.
Exactly.
And that's excellent puns, guys. Just tremendous job on the puns. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, Josh Cooper of the Tennessean is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly after 12:30, I'm Drew Mindell, joined by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program, he's from the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville, Josh Cooper. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
How you doing, Josh?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Let's start off with the first question. We've sort of heard it's going to be Pekka Rinne versus Andrei Pavlik. Is that can you confirm that?
I can confirm the Pekka Rinne part. I'm not quite sure about the Pavlik part, though. I think that would probably be the assumption. So, yeah, it sounds like Rinne is going again tonight. Big game for the Preds. They really do need the 2 points very badly.
Josh, the big news out of Nashville, obviously, you know, was Alexander Radulov. It was confirmed that Alexander Radulov was coming back to the Nashville Predators after 4 years in Russia's Continental Hockey League. And obviously, he made his debut Thursday night and got a goal against Pittsburgh. Is there any, you know, sense in Nashville, maybe, you know, in the team circles or maybe, you know, amongst fans that this is going to be a distraction and somehow a negative thing? Or is Radulov coming back nothing but, you know, good news?
I think it's something with good news. You know, I think that, you know, it does make things a little bit more difficult for some of the more depth guys in terms of kind of, you know, who you play and when you play them. But I think it's mostly good. I mean, you see there's a bit more of an uptick and sort of attitude and mindset amongst the players here. And, you know, they know he's going to help them win. I think that's the most important thing. He's got dynamic goal-scoring ability. Not so much a great skater, but a guy who's really good kind of down low and very, very quick kind of around the goal mouth. So, you know, he's the type of goal scorer that they've lacked here for a lot of years. And, you know, he should provide a pretty dynamic presence for them.
Josh, this day and age, matchups seem to be just so important heading into the playoffs. You know, Nashville is tied with Chicago right now. They have a game in hand. They have an edge in regulation and overtime wins. And Chicago just lost Duncan Keith for 5 games. If the Predators do lock up, you know, fifth or fourth, obviously home ice is very important. But what would be the biggest issue with a matchup with Detroit? Like, what would be the one thing that Nashville would have to be specifically worried about?
Honestly, I think mostly it's the aura. I think they match up very well against Detroit, especially with all the injuries they have. I mean, you know, kind of watching the last game, I know it was, you know, the first game. Maybe I don't know if it was the first game Datsyuk was back after, you know, his knee surgery. But, I mean, he did not look in any way, shape, or form like the Datsyuk that we all know. I mean, Lidstrom obviously still hurt. And, you know, I think that the big thing would just be the aura of playing Detroit and playing playoff games in the Jill. I mean, they've never beaten Detroit in the playoffs. They played them, I think, 2 or 3 times, and you know, it's just they've always kind of been, you know, the team's kryptonite. But you know, I think that you know, they match up, considering, as I said, the injuries of Detroit very well against them now, and I think that that's really, you know, a team that if they do end up playing them in the first round, I think Nashville really could end up beating them.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Josh Cooper. He writes for the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville. Josh, one of the big acquisitions on trade deadline day, late in the day on trade deadline day, was the Predators picking up Paul Gostad from Buffalo in exchange for the first round pick. I know he's been banged up. He's been sort of in and out of the lineup since he's been into Nashville. What impact has he had? What are the hopes that what hopes do the Predators have for him? And is he coming back into the lineup tonight?
He's coming back in the lineup tonight. And I think, you know, the reason why they got him was he's a face-off ace. He's a guy who can win those big draws. He's a guy who can play, you know, go toe-to-toe and head-to-head against top teams. So, you know, I think that he's an important cog in terms of what they plan to do, not so much in the regular season, but really in those kind of tight, close, checking playoff games.
Josh, have you noticed, a similar – well, I guess not similar, but have you noticed the impact of Hal Gill, you know, and has he solidified that defense core, you know, even though he's only been there for now, you know, 3 weeks or so?
Well, first and foremost, it's really hard to miss him. I mean, he's 6'7", so I have noticed him, literally. But, yeah, he's, you know, he's a big part of what they do. He kind of snuffs out those cycles. It's very important on the penalty kill. Got a really long reach, great in the locker room. You know, I talked to Dan Bylsma when I was in Pittsburgh a couple days ago and asked him about Hal Gill, and you know, he had nothing but incredible things to say about him and really, really liked him. So, you know, he's the type of guy that, you know, he's important for a postseason run. You know, he's a very solid player. He's, you know, he's incredibly vital for this team and what they need to do.
What about Andre Kostitsyn and Josh? How's he been?
Up and down. He started out pretty well. I think he had 6 points in his first five games and has kind of tailed off a little bit since then. So, you know, had a real strong start and then, you know, kind of tailed off. Honestly, kind of very similar to the player that we all saw in Montreal, just kind of inconsistent, great one night, very okay the other night.
What do you attribute, Josh? I mean, the Predators have the top power play in the league. It's kind of been a different season for them. Usually you look at the Predators kind of coming into the playoffs, they have some pretty good underlying numbers at 5-on-5, control the puck. This year they're being outshot, you know, about three shots per game, haven't been great at 5-on-5, but yet have been tremendous on the power play. What's the reason for that change?
You know, I think that the power play is just, you know, it's funny, like earlier in the year, I was looking at their power play and I was like, well, how in the world is it so bad when you have, you know, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber at points? And I think what they've done is they've started utilizing Suter a little bit more. It used to kind of be, you know, try to shade over to Shea Weber, let him just fire that slap shot and try to get someone deflected. Now they're letting Suter take more shots. They're letting him kind of run the point kind of as an equal, you know, partner with Shea Weber back there. And, you know, it's really kind of helped. It's given them more options. It's opened things up down low and created a lot more types of offensive situations and types of plays for them.
Josh, sorry about that, Josh. You know, the Predators have always been the team where, you know, it was incremental progress. First it was making the playoffs, and then it was winning that first round. After they've invested so much, you know, all the deals they made at the deadline, they have Ryan Suter's contract status after this season. You know, what does the team consider success for the playoffs this season?
Stanley Cup. You're all in. I mean, they've traded all sorts of draft picks. They haven't wanted to get rid of anyone in their roster, and I think that they are all in to win the Stanley Cup this year, and anything short of that would be an absolute massive disappointment for them.
You know, in terms of, you know, hockey in Nashville, I think a lot of people don't respect it enough, Josh, about how much, you know, the loyalty of the fans. I think people are starting to a little bit more. This team has obviously been quite talked about in the hockey world and obviously by the passionate fan base in Nashville. Is the team starting to capture the imagination of maybe the fringe hockey fans a bit heading into the playoffs?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, it's tough for me to kind of gauge kind of how big it is. I mean, the other day I was walking past, you know, a sports bar next to the arena. I saw the NHL Network playing, and I was just flabbergasted by that.
Really?
So, you know, I still think it's growing here. I don't think it's quite there yet. But, you know, I do think a deep playoff run can help just because the city has never won a championship, anything really. I mean, I don't know if the Nashville Sounds Triple-A team has, but I don't think any of their major pro teams have. I mean, the Titans, as we know, came 1 yard short, I think, of sending the Super Bowl to overtime. Yeah. The city's never won a championship, and I think that, you know, if they do go on a deep run, then I think that that's kind of a shared experience for all the people and sports fans living in the city to which, you know, they can kind of share for the rest of their lives.
Josh, we talked about Pekka Rinne at the beginning of the interview, and he will start for the Predators tonight. I believe it's his 67th start of 74, 75 games. And a colleague of yours, Mike Organ, wrote a piece in the Tennessean that the Predators aren't at all worried about Pekka Rinne. And to me, it seems absolutely ridiculous that people were you know, criticizing Pekka Rinne or saying that he's getting tired or something like that. As far as I'm concerned, if it wasn't maybe for Henrik Lundqvist, he'd win the Vezina Trophy this year. So do you agree with your colleague in that, you know, Pekka Rinne is there's nothing to worry about there?
I don't think there's nothing to worry about. I think there's a lot to worry about there. I mean, you kind of look at, you know, goalies who have won the Stanley Cup. I think the last goaltender who played over 70 games and won the Stanley Cup is Marty Brodeur, and we all know he's a freak. So
he's a genetic freak.
I think there's a lot to worry about. I think that, you know, he is playing a lot, and I think that, You know, I mean, I think that they do try to monitor their minutes and kind of how they their practice load to a degree. But, you know, I wasn't at this practice. It was during an off day. But I believe somebody told me that they couldn't practice shootouts one day because he was just so exhausted from the previous night's game.
Wow.
I mean, so I think there's a lot of stock that you can put into that. I mean, that he is playing a lot. He's under a lot of fire every night, too. And it's a lot of pressure to win. I mean, maybe not as much as there was last year when they were a little bit more offensively challenged. But you know, there's still a lot of pressure to try to hold it close. And he really does, you know, carry a lot of weight and a lot of burden on his shoulders.
On that point, Josh, I mean, tonight's game, for example, obviously, if you were going to finish 4-5, you want the home ice advantage. But the sixth spot's looking pretty enticing right now, considering one of those Pacific Division teams who've all had their struggles this year would be available for the Nashville to play if they finish sixth. So there's not a ton of downside there. And you know why, for example, for tonight's game, with the Jets playing a back-to-back game, so being a little bit tired, the Jets not really being certainly not a top team in the National Hockey League, why wouldn't you throw in a guy like Lindback tonight?
That's a good question. You know, he's very trusted, kind of done this all year. And I remember when they had, you know, a game against the Islanders and then the second of a back-to-back against the Rangers. He played Rene against the Islanders and played Lindback against the Rangers. These were both on the road. I mean, he's known to do this in the past, so at least for me it's not a big shock. But, you know, you mentioned kind of the sixth spot, though, and, you know, I was kind of looking at the standings. And if Phoenix wins tonight, I think that they are only 4 points back of Nashville for the sixth. In L.A., I think, is in three. I don't know if Phoenix jumps L.A. into the three.
They do.
Okay, they do. But either way, I mean, the Pacific Division, I mean, granted, they've been kind of slow all year, but, I mean, they're starting to pick up their game a little bit. And, if Nashville does end up in the six, and they play, well, first of all, if they end up in the seven, they end up playing Vancouver in the first round, right, which would be an absolute travel disaster for them. And then on top of that, if they end up in the six, I mean, do you really want a red-hot out Los Angeles right now? I don't think so. So, you know, I think that, it's kind of getting dicey, and it's tough to really tell what's the better matchup just because of how teams are picking up their games, like, say, Los Angeles is versus how teams are kind of losing their games, which is what's happening with Detroit right now.
Josh Cooper of the Tennessean, we'll find out later on this evening. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy tonight's game.
No worries, anytime, guys.
Thanks, Josh. Take care.
Thanks a lot for coming on.
Josh Cooper from the Tennessean joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jets Predators puck drop tonight, 6 o'clock here on the station. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, Paul Edmonds with the call. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Josh Cooper of the Tennessean for joining us to talk about the Jets-Predators matchup later on tonight. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website, which I must say is really looking better than it has in a long, long time.
It's been an Illegal Curve refresh.
Well, that wasn't what I was talking about. I'm talking about the content, the morning papers.
Oh, yeah. Michael's doing a fantastic job.
Dave has been shuffled off to Vegas.
Yep.
So Remus has been taking over. He's been doing a great job in the last few days, I must say. You know, and so really, I think I speak for everybody when I say Dave Manuku.
Michael's been doing an awesome job. There's some good game day previews up there as well from a nice writer that we've contracted out. You know, Josh Cooper.
You're talking about yourself.
Josh
for
Cooper,
the people that might not know that.
Yeah, Josh Cooper of the Tennessean was just on, but you know what? I don't agree with him when he says. Actually, I mean,
well, I agree with him.
I agree, I agree with him too. So this is a typical Richard and Drew versus Ezra.
Hold on. Then why, if you're in favor of Pekka Rinne playing, why are you? Or not playing, why are you in favor of Pavlik playing?
Because the Jets are in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They can't finish worse than six. You know, he's worried about they're 6 points. Anybody 6 points back is not making it now. Hello, Jets
but
fans.
It's still the same principle.
It's not the same principle.
It's not. You're resting a guy because you're going to go on a playoff run versus you're hoping to get in the first round
rest
and get killed.
Rest.
No. The Jets need to
rest,
play.
No.
Context is important.
Yeah, the Jets need to play their best players in order to just get to the playoffs.
I'm not going
to
argue with Richard. He has a law degree.
Nashville,
doesn't matter.
Nashville, I mean, you can't honestly say that it's the same... the Jets need to play their best players.
Nice shirt, Drew.
Thank you. The Jets need to play their best players
by
far. This
is the Richard Pollock ADD hour.
But, I mean, I don't understand for a second why they're not playing
okay,
wingbacks.
Okay, you know what?
Tonight.
I'll give it to you. I'll say this much. Nashville is definitely making the playoffs. They haven't clinched yet, I don't believe.
Well, thanks for going out on a limb there, Izzy.
But, I mean, don't you want your best players refreshed for the playoffs? Don't you want them feeling as good as they can possibly feel?
I know how it worked with and the thing is, I don't buy that argument, by the way, that Marty Broder. I'm not picking on Josh Cooper here. I mean, first off, Marty Broder is maybe a freak in how good he is. He's not exactly Mr. Conditioning.
True.
As far as I'm concerned, this is what they did with Marty Broder in the days when he used to play 70 games. Marty, do you want to play? Yes, you're playing. It's as simple as that. It's a fact.
I don't think that Marty Brodeur can be compared to any other typical NHLer. I don't see. I mean, if I had Barry Trotz in front of me, I'd say, walk me through your logic of starting Pekka Rinne.
Yep.
And I don't see how it makes logical sense for a team that is pretty clearly in either the fourth or the fifth or the sixth playoff spot.
Yep.
Doesn't need this game. It's not a must win like it is for the Jets. And that's why the Jets have to play Pavlik, because they don't have any margin of error. If Nashville has some margin of error, you know.
About this? Nashville's lost two games.
And it's not like Anders Lindback is a bad goaltender.
Nashville's lost two games in a row here.
Right.
Tutu's a healthy scratch tonight, according to Brian Munns.
Yeah, we just got that email.
Oh, not happy. Richie's ADD is back.
Well, no, we just got the email from Brian Munns who says that Jordan Tutu is a healthy scratch.
Why don't I get those emails?
You do.
Oh. What about this train of what about this train of thought here? They've lost two games in a row. They're about to head into the playoffs. I want to put my number one goalie in there. That's what Trotz is thinking.
You have another seven games in order to get your number one goalie in there. What if you let him rest? You give him like 4 days off instead. I mean, let's look at Nashville. Hang on, let me just pull up Nashville's schedule here. They played when? They played Thursday in Pittsburgh. Is that right?
Yeah, they lost 5-1.
Okay, so if they don't play him, and so they're gonna play. They play back to back. They play tomorrow.
Who they play tomorrow?
They play Chicago tomorrow.
It's a tough Central Division game.
They fly from...
They'll play Lindback tomorrow.
Chicago's 1 point behind them. Wouldn't you want to play him against
the best
player?
Wouldn't you want to play Rinne against... If you don't play Rinne tonight, you give him Friday and Saturday off and have him refreshed for a Sunday game in Chicago. You know, as opposed to playing him against the Jets tonight, you're going to throw Rinne and you're going to throw Lindback against Chicago tomorrow? It doesn't make logical sense.
Play Rinne again tomorrow, too.
That doesn't really make sense.
That really doesn't make sense, then.
Some things in life don't make sense, Drew.
Thank you, Ezra.
Profound.
That's very profound. It's as profound as a guy wearing a t-shirt of meat on it as I've ever seen.
Drew, you took a bite out of a shirt in the middle of the last break.
You know,
Drew, you know what?
I got to interrupt.
You went to Hunger Games last night.
I didn't, but I got to interrupt for a second. I got to interrupt for a second. You know, Richie, you throw me under the bus
here
each
you
and
go.
Every week.
Let's go. The gloves are off. Ring
each
the bell.
And every week you try and throw me under the bus, and each and every week here's the exact same scenario. Ezra purchases a muffin for himself. Prior to the show. Each and every week, you steal that muffin from him and eat the entire thing.
I stole it today again, too.
Richie's my future landlord. He can take whatever he wants. I have nowhere to live if I... Muffin.
Are you paying him in muffins?
No. I'm paying him in blank checks, but...
Bounce higher checks. Than a rubber ball, let me tell you.
No, but, you know, on this topic, I mean, tonight is a huge game, but I truly believe, as far as when it comes down to these starting goalies, I mean, these, you know, Pekka Rinne is not a young guy. Pardon me, he's not an old guy. He's 29 years old. He's in his prime, and Andrei Pavlik is in his prime. Let teams make their decisions on who their number one goalie is and stick by that. That's it. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay, that's fine.
Thanks, Don.
Yeah, this is really, you know, you're just ending the conversation there. Yeah. I want to talk about briefly before we go up to the top of the hour. The concept of Patrick Waugh as the new head coach or the new general manager in Montreal. You read Roy McGregor in today's Globe and Mail.
Yep, wrote about it.
We love Roy. I mean, we love Roy on this program. We love his writing. We talk about it probably on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Waugh in Montreal, I think, makes too much sense not to happen.
Too much sense from a media perspective. I mean, doesn't
who's a better candidate that can fit all
we're
the
talking about coach or GM?
Well, they're talking about him being as the GM, I believe. No, as GM, and Bob Hartley is allegedly coming in as coach.
Oh, that's the rumor.
That's what it started with a Radio Canada guy,
yep.
Radio Canada en français.
Well, that's a great French accent.
Yeah, en français, saying that it was going to be Waugh as general manager and Hartley as head coach.
That makes sense.
By the way, the reason why I think they do that is that way if Hartley, you know, doesn't get it together after a couple of years, Watt can just move down to become the head coach there. That's how.
Now,
that's
Hartley's why he's known to be hard on his young players. The Habs are a young team. That's something to take into consideration.
Fine.
What about Patrick Waugh in terms of managing the cap and all those things? I mean, is that a good situation?
You know what? He needs to be the front guy. He just needs to be the face.
Maybe.
Of the team.
I mean, to me, I'm hiring Julian Breezeball to be the GM.
Yeah.
And then
we should mention he's the Tampa Bay assistant GM now.
That's who I'm hiring to be the GM. Yep. And then to be the coach, I don't mind Waugh or somebody else. I mean, coaching is a lot different than managing. I don't see any reason why Patrick Waugh would be capable as a manager in this CBA in this day and age. Could he be a coach? Certainly. Would he be a nice, fiery coach? Would he bring some attention to the team? Can he speak both languages? Can he go toe-to-toe with media? Can he go toe-to-toe with players? A lot of that, yeah, he can do. It'd be an interesting fit, but I would start first and foremost with hiring Julian Breezeball. Now, from a media perspective, Waugh as anything. Waugh as GM and Hartley as coach. Those are two opinionated guys.
Well, I'll tell you what. If
anything's better than that guy, the GM formerly known as Pierre Gauthier.
Well, when they had Gauthier and Jacques Martin, the problem was neither guy ever spoke to the media or ever said anything.
Yeah.
And part of the game in Montreal is being able to play the media.
I agree, and I 100% agree.
And so you only need one guy to necessarily play the media. So if Waugh is going to be the head coach, he'll be responsible for the media, and the media will lap it up because he'll have him in the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, Julian Breezeball can do his own thing behind the scenes and not have to worry about the secondary, specifically hockey-related.
Exactly right.
Guys, I think there's a very good chance that Patrick Waugh, I think it's a matter of time before he's involved.
If they don't hire
team.
Patrick Waugh, who would they hire? Who do they hire?
There's many other capable coaches.
Capable coaches that speak in both languages?
They would like a bilingual coach.
They have to have a bilingual coach. Jeff Molson guaranteed that it has to be a bilingual coach.
Right. Let's think about that. I mean, what if Vancouver bounces in the first round this year?
So you're saying Alain Vigneault?
I mean, does he go back there? Well, what about Hartley?
What's Jean Perron doing these days?
Smoking. It depends on other young coaches. I mean, obviously, Drew, they are limited, and Al Strachan spoke with that in this show. That's an issue. But another thing to take consideration is there are rumors. There are rumors that Quebec's going to be back next year as the Coyotes are going to become Quebec. And there are rumors that one of the reasons why that Waugh rumor was leaked was because Quebec and Marcel Lebeau wants Waugh to work there. So they're trying to lay a little bit of a claim to him.
It's funny, guys.
You're talking about the Coyotes moving to Quebec in time for next season.
Hey, stranger things have happened. We have an NHL team. Patrick Waugh right now is the owner, general manager, and head coach of the Quebec Remparts.
Yeah, that's the juniors.
Hold on. I'm just saying he's of the Quebec Rempart of the QMJHL, and it's a similar situation to the way I look at it that Brent Sutter was in with the Red Deer Rebels.
Very similar.
I mean, Patrick Waugh likes what he's doing. He owns the
Dale
team.
Hunter with the Washington Capitals right now.
London Knights. He's the owner. He's the GM. I mean, he has a good situation there. I mean, and the thing is, he'll leave it.
You know why? Because these teams, people don't realize, these junior teams make money.
Of course.
They're the only thing to do in a lot of small towns, and they're the prime.
They don't pay anything. They pay a couple bucks per player.
Yeah, what do you pay? A tiny per diem of whatever. I mean, you're exactly right. So, and guess what? When you own the team,
by the way, you
don't fire yourself.
And by the way,
that would be awkward.
If you noticed. Sutter still owns Red Deer. Mark Hunter runs the team now in London, but Hunter still owns. Like, these guys don't leave and sell the team. They keep the team and then just go work somewhere else and collect another salary.
Sure, because if they get fired from their NHL job, then they can go back and run their team.
But Waugh, it cannot be the GM. I mean, you can't do that. He's not capable.
Waugh will be the coach. And I think, he'll be involved with this team very, very soon, in my opinion.
I can't wait till him and Tortorella start yelling at each other, pointing at each other, and going nuts on the bench. We need more of that.
More coaches going out.
Yeah. Makes it more fun.
I'm not arguing with you. He will certainly liven up a coaching rank that has been subdued.
And they're gonna get a top pick, and he's gonna be very familiar with that pick.
How nice would it be to have Patrick Waugh involved with that team on a daily basis for a young goalie like Carey Price? Who better than Patrick Waugh to work with Carey Price?
Good point. Imagine you have Waugh drop in there as a coach, and then they get maybe the top pick or one of those top three picks. You have a superstar player coming up. You bring Waugh in. You're the story. You're always the story of Montreal, but then you become the story.
Well, the problem is they've been the story this year for all the wrong reasons.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe for right reasons.
Hey, yeah. Big win last night. What about Eric Cole? Yeah. Natural hat trick in the first period.
In the first 6 minutes of the game.
Wow. Over 30 goals this year.
I mean, the Habs have been.
You didn't like the signing.
I didn't like the signing. I didn't like the four-year term.
Hold on. But Richie,
they
signed Eric Cole to put them to give them strength up front, yeah. and to get mm-hmm. past the first round of the playoffs. No. In that sense, it didn't work. No. Well, the problem with the Habs is they didn't improve in other areas. Eric Cole, he's got 30 goals. Good signing. Maybe he might overpaid. But as far as
Gary missed to pull up the clip about our comments about Cole in the summer, and then we can play it. That'd be interesting.
Right.
Half the time we don't remember what we said.
In fact, we make it up. That's what makes it so unique.
From a team perspective, it wasn't a good signing. From an individual perspective, great signing.
Well, I mean, the reason it wasn't a good signing from a team perspective is they misjudged the caliber
rest of their team.
They thought that Eric Cole was going to put them to another level. Never mind, you know.
Exactly.
Right. You know, they'd be in the same position with or without Eric Cole. It's not like they're challenging for a playoff spot one way or the other. Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side of the break, we have much more to come. We're going to talk about the top half of the Eastern Conference playoff picture when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come, James Gordon from the Ottawa Citizen, Drew Remenda from the San Jose Sharks, and a representative of the Brandon Wheat Kings ahead of Game 3 between the Wheat Kings and Hitmen tomorrow at MTS Center. Jets Predators gets underway tonight at 6 o'clock here on the station. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Paul Edmonds with the call. Hustler and Lawless follow us, and then Rick Ralph.
Andrew Lawless and Gary Patterson.
Yeah, them too, exactly. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Richard Pollock. That's Ezra Ginsberg. I'm Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Let's look at the Eastern Conference playoff race, gentlemen, if you would be so kind to do so with me.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Richie. I appreciate the enthusiasm you just demonstrated there. Are the Pittsburgh Penguins, given what we've seen of them this week, demolishing the Jets, demolishing a very good Nashville mm-hmm. Predators team,
yeah.
are the Pittsburgh Penguins just Stanley Cup favorite?
Well, go back and look at who we predicted in October. Yes.
You know, we call you Drew, Johnny come lately. Ezzy and I picked Pittsburgh to win the Cup.
We've been talking about Pittsburgh for 2 months.
Who did I pick?
I think you had Boston. I checked this week, actually.
I may have had Boston. It's not like I picked anybody.
Drew, Boston for the repeat. Come on.
Now, in terms of Pittsburgh, I mean...
Cliche.
The team I see giving them the most trouble is Philly. Only because I think Philly can go four lines deep and with speed on offense and cause some problems for the Pittsburgh defense. But I still see Pittsburgh beating every team they face. Philly gives them the most trouble, but Pittsburgh is better than every other team in the National Hockey League if healthy. Right now, they're healthy. To me, they're the best team. They have so much talent at center. Dan Bylsma does such a great job of utilizing his players in the right situations. They penalty kill well. Everybody knows their role. And, you know, a guy like Jordan Staal doesn't pout about being a third-line center, really, when it comes down to it. You know, defenseman.
He could be a first-line center.
Yeah, exactly, and I worry about their defense in terms of Paul Martin and Niskanen and England.
I was going to ask about their defense good enough?
But does it have to be? Because your forwards are so good, you have a pretty good top three defense, you have an all-star caliber goaltender, and a great coach. Every team in this league has flaws, and I think they have the least flaws amongst every other team.
I agree. I think Vancouver's in that category too, maybe the only other team in that category. Detroit might have been, but with their injury problems, maybe not. There's a couple things I want to say about the Pittsburgh Penguins, because right now, what have they won? 13 of their last 14, I think? Mm-hmm. They've lost one game.
They're 9-0-1 in their last 10, so yeah, it's been a ridiculous streak they're on.
Yep, and you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, with Crosby back, even without Crosby, you know, they were dominant. With Crosby back, now they're unstoppable. I think if you look at the game against the Winnipeg Jets, the last game where Pittsburgh beat the Jets 8-4. The Jets didn't have a poor game. Sure, they went chance for chance with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. But you could score they could have scored 6 or 7 goals in that game and Pittsburgh would have scored 9, 10. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins have so much offensive firepower, and I think you look at a sign that a team is really good is you look at guys like Pascal Dupuis. You look at Aaron Asham, you look at Craig Adams. Do those players look that good on another team? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at who Crosby's playing with, Tyler Kennedy and Pascal Dupuis, and on the so-called third line or second line, whatever you want to call it. But up the middle, yeah, Richie's right. But you look at the other guys that they can throw out that can get the job done. The top line of Malkin, Kunitz, and Neal. I mean, how many points do those guys have combined this year? 400? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Malkin's the MVP winner.
And
you can't argue that.
You know, no. And Drew, you know, just to go back to your question about the defense, I, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the defense, Richie, isn't as good as when they won the Cup in 2009.
It's not even as good as last year.
I think Marc-Andre Fleury is a better goaltender than he was in 2009.
Good point.
And I think their forwards are better than 2009. So I think on defense, yeah, there'll be some matchup concerns, like Richie said, when there's a team like the Philadelphia Flyers, the New York Rangers, that have, you know, four good lines, especially the Flyers.
I don't think the Rangers' defense can handle the Penguins' offense. Philly's defense, I trust a little bit more than the Rangers because it's a little bit deeper. But Philly's offense, obviously Brizgalov is a wild card, and we can get into that when the playoffs
preview. It's been phenomenal the last few months.
Right, when that happens, if he starts playing well. But the Philly lineup, front to top to bottom, is, to me, the second best lineup cast in the league, aside from Pittsburgh. So can Pittsburgh's defense handle that? I think that Bylsma is a better coach than Laviolette. I don't think Laviolette's a bad coach by any means, but I think Bylsma is a better coach.
Has Bylsma overtaken Mike Babcock as the best coach in the NHL?
I don't know. I mean, we need a little more time, right? Babcock's been doing this for quite a while now. People don't even remember that Babcock took the Anaheim Ducks to the Stanley Cup final before the lockout. So, no, not yet. But he's a heck of a coach, and I think it's almost a shoo-in to be the coach of the U.S. team going into the 2014 Sochi.
I wouldn't think there'd be any question. So you don't think it'd be Ron Wilson again?
Yeah, don't think it'd be Ron Wilson again.
Yeah,
exactly. Come on, let's stop living on the glory of the 1996 World Cup when Tony Amonte got that high sticking goal. Come on, the goal with the high stick. Remember that goal?
Yeah, no, you definitely do.
Oh, sorry, it's Brad Hull. Brad Hull, right? And then Amonte
kicked it in. Yeah.
That was the worst game ever.
You guys still haven't really got
over
that.
If you were a U.S. hockey fan, that was a great game. If you were a Canadian hockey fan, that was one of the worst moments ever.
Well, Sather didn't have the second center on for the faceoff.
You're still upset about that,
game
eh?
3, yeah.
Oh, that was true. I mean,
Canada was up 2-1 in the 10 minutes left in the third period. In game three.
I remember the game.
That was the inaugural World Cup. Come on.
Yeah, that's my problem is, you know, who cares?
Well, you know what? They're talking about a World Cup instead of the Olympics, by the way.
Why?
Well, they got to have something.
Well, why?
Revenue.
I'll tell you why.
Make money. Yeah, I know, but who cares? Besides Canadians, who cares?
I don't think just Canadians.
What would you rather see?
There's a lot of American
fans. I actually like the World Cup better because of the possibility. Now, they changed it. But back in the day, the Canada Cup, when you actually had a series, that was better. Like, if they had a five-game final series of Canada-Russia, Canada-US, you're not telling me that's better than a one-gamer?
Are you telling me that? Answer this question for me.
Riddle me that.
It's middle of June, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin have just won the Stanley Cup together.
Okay.
This is going down a couple years down the road if this comes back.
Okay.
Are you telling me that 6 weeks later in the Canada Cup or the World Cup of Hockey, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin really have a hate on for each other playing Canada against Russia?
If they want to win badly enough, absolutely.
You think they care?
Yeah, I do.
You know what? I think,
you think Sidney Crosby or any of these NHLers who've played 100 games?
True. You know, the competitive
per season?
Yeah.
You think they want to go out and play in an exhibition?
Did Gretzky want to play in 87 after they won the Cup?
The Russians were not as profound in the NHL in 87 as they are today. It was different.
Sure. Even so, still want to beat them. What about the game in the Olympics against Russia? How intense was it?
I think it was the Olympics that made it so. It was the Olympics. It was it's not a made-for-TV event.
I'm saying the only reason why I like it more is if they go back to the series component where you actually see the best players up against each other. You see matchup, you see changes, you see strategies as opposed to a one-gamer.
These made-for-TV events don't excite me. That's why there's the Olympics. The Olympics is every 4 years. You know what happens.
I prefer the Olympics. It's going to be one game like the World Cup is switched to in 2004. Then, yeah, the Olympics, of course, because the platform is so much bigger.
The NHL participation in the Olympics by no means is a slam dunk. You can't tell me that there's anything that there's nothing pointing to the NHL going to the 2014 Olympics right now. It's up in the air. So if there isn't NHL hockey in the Olympics, Drew, I think fans would like to see a World Cup every 4 years.
I disagree.
You disagree with fans wanting a World Cup?
I know the fans might, but I personally, if they don't go to play in Sochi, it would be a shame and a disgrace if they then have a World Cup of hockey in the summer 5 months later.
Why?
Why? Because it's made up. You had this opportunity. Just because the time zone doesn't work, you're telling me Evgeny Malkin and Alex Ovechkin are going to accept, you didn't let us go play for our country when the Olympics are in our country, but we're going to hang around and we're going to play in your made-for-TV revenue
that's
nonsense?
That's a different story.
That's like saying soccer should get rid of the World Cup and go to the Olympics because it's... What's the World Cup?
If soccer ever set the precedent of sending their best soccer players country by country to the Olympics and then did the World Cup, I would say that's the same thing, but it's not. You've never seen the best soccer players all play in the Olympics. You've seen the best hockey players play in the Olympics.
Yeah, but what do you think they're doing the World Cup for? It's for money.
Of course it's for the money, but it's also the only time you see the best soccer players play head-to-head against each other.
I'm agreeing with you in terms of you can't have both, first of all.
No.
And you also can't cherry-pick which one. If you're going to bail in the Olympics, you got to bail for the long haul, not for one Olympics because you don't like the time zone.
You know very
first
well
of all, they're going to the Olympics.
I think they are going to the Olympics also. I think just the I don't care about the time zone.
It'll kill them for the KHL. They'll lose more Russian players if they don't go to the Olympics. I'm telling you right now.
Ovechkin has already said he's been on record for a number of years now.
I'm talking long term.
I know. He's been on the record for a number of years now saying, I'm going to the Olympics. I don't care what else happens.
And Drew, you know what? The point here is, there's a huge issue with, if you want to call it, foreign relations. But if the NHL decides to go to the Olympics in Sochi, which we're saying it's likely, it's not...
Well, we don't
know. Nothing's been confirmed. But then
it'll
be
part of the CBA.
But just say that you're going to do it from now on then. Stop with this. Are we going to go or are we not going to go? If you're going to go, go every 4 years. Just say that NHL players are going to play in the Olympics. There shouldn't be, as far as I'm concerned, this is the fact that this is an issue, it's not that far away. I mean, the Vancouver Olympics were 2 years ago. 2 years from now, the Winter Olympics are coming up and we don't know yet if they're going to play in the Olympics. I mean, they've got to make the decision pretty soon here.
Can we talk matchups for a second quickly to get back? I mean, right now, as the playoffs started today, Pittsburgh's playing Philly in the first round. So that's the worst matchup for Pittsburgh, I think, in the playoffs, period.
Pittsburgh does have a game in hand on the Rangers.
Right.
And if they win that game, they would overtake the Rangers.
I mean, either way you cut it.
For first in the conference.
Likely that those Philly's going to be fifth. So likely it's going to be, it's going to be almost certainly, because Devils are 4 points back of Philly. But you're going to have a Rangers, Flyers, or Pittsburgh Flyers first round. That is... made for TV drama.
Of course. I mean, which is a shame because that really probably should be the Eastern Conference final.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with the Florida being third. They should get a guaranteed playoff
Florida
spot.
Florida or Boston being third.
They should be
a
guaranteed playoff spot and go wherever their point system takes them.
Right. Guarantee the play, exactly, and just slot them where they slot them. Yeah. I mean, the truth is, because if you look at it...
And if it ends up being the eighth spot...
Because the top four teams in the Eastern Conference are all Atlantic Division teams.
Yeah.
Look at it. Rangers would be one.
We're not Boston, they're Northeast.
I'm not talking about Boston.
Not
I'm talking about
seeding,
New Jersey.
But yes, by wins.
Oh, that's
yes.
Right. Yes, yes.
Look at if they went by standings, Rangers are one right now.
Good point,
Pittsburgh is two. Philly is three. Jersey is four. Then it's Boston, Florida, Ottawa, and Washington. I mean, you got a top four. Instead, you're going to lose out on two.
It's going to be a very the East is top heavy, but it's going to be a fun playoffs because I think those top teams are going to square off against each other as it moves forward. Like I don't think Florida or Ottawa or Washington or Buffalo are going to beat any of those teams.
No,
but that ends up being a really good second, third round series.
Yeah, I just think it's a shame that the Atlantic Division teams are all going to beat up each other on each other in the first round.
Fair enough.
Okay, we'll leave it there. When we come back, I think we're going to go look at the Western Conference playoff situation. Much more to come. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Ezra Ginsberg. He's wearing a t-shirt with a big piece of meat on it. That's Richard Pollock. He's wearing one of the Illegal Curve hats available through our website, www.illegalcurve.com, or at our good friends at City Hall on Cordon Avenue.
Sorry to cut you off really quickly. Nobody looks better in a fitted hat than Richie P.
Thank you, Ezzy.
He rocks a fitted hat better than anybody. A 5950, whether it's a Major League hat or the Illegal Curve hat. You do too, Drew. You look good in a hat too. Not backwards, though.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey at the Cheer Bar and Grill. We'll be there tonight. It was a good time last night, Ezzy. You were there?
Yeah, it was awesome times. You know, it's funny. This has been such a fun year. I mean, yeah, the Jets are in a playoff race, but... You know, I think sometimes you forget that this is our first year back in the NHL, and we've only got 12 road victories this year. And 8 of those 12 road victories have been in either overtime or in the shootout. 8 of 12. And we've been there all year. And last night was another overtime game. And it's been so exciting. This team, it's a young team, and they're fighting for their lives. And, you know, I think tonight is going to be another awesome game at the Cheer.
And we will be back there for the Jets-Predators game tonight. Puck drop at 6 o'clock. You can come join us. We always have a good time. We give away prizes. We have drinks. We're very friendly
trivia.
People.
The trivia is getting popular. Last night we asked a question during the second period And, you know, 30
and you
people,
were still sober.
30 people yelled out the answer at the same time. It's awesome. Trivia is becoming a staple there.
That's good to hear. Let's look at the Western Conference situation where we're at right now. St. Louis Blues still have a comfortable lead, 4 points up on the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, you know, Canucks have been scuffling as of late, 4-5-1 in the last 10. The Blues just continue to roll, 6-2-2 in their last 10. The Los Angeles Kings are now up there in third place. That Pacific Division is really just flip-flopping on a nightly basis. Let me ask you this question. Are the St. Louis Blues getting enough respect and enough consideration to be the Western Conference representative in the Stanley Cup Finals?
I think so. I actually think they should be worried about getting too much. Like, I think first is going to hurt them, only because it increases the expectations for them. And I know, obviously, they're gonna, you know, if they play Dallas in the first round, they have a pretty good chance. San Jose will obviously be a difficult matchup for them. I think Phoenix will just be a one-goal game. I think St. Louis is going to play a lot of close games. But I think, Drew, that they'd like to go in under the radar because, with the first seed, which is essentially locked up for them, not essentially, it's pretty close because they're 5 points up on Vancouver with the tiebreakers. First place is important, but then you come in as the first place team in the West. And that carries significant expectations. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. But I don't think they're being disrespected at all.
It's tough when you go, you know, you go from a non-playoff year, you start off the season, everyone knows they started off the season poorly, and Davis Payne was axed after, just over a month. It's tough to look at them as the front runner, Drew, obviously, when you've got Vancouver, you've got Detroit, and you've got, even though Chicago's not in the top three, you've got Chicago there. It's tough to crown them, and you can't forget what happened when in 2000 when they won the President's Trophy and then got knocked out in the first year. That was the year they had Chris Pronger, and Chris Pronger had that awesome season when he was younger. So I think they're getting respect. I think the St. Louis Blues this year is one of the greatest stories. And the St. Louis Blues came into Winnipeg, and they don't have any superstars, but they've got a lot of really good players: TJ Oshie, David Perron, David Backes. Alex Pietrangelo has been. I think Alex, you can make an argument. Alex Pietrangelo is borderline Norris candidate. Maybe not a Norris candidate, but he's in that. Let's say he's a fringe Norris candidate. I think he's been that good, and the future looks bright. It's been a great story, and I think they're a really good hockey team. Two really good goalies. I don't think St. Louis is. I think St. Louis is going to max out as in the second round. I think they'll probably win their first round. I don't think they're going to get to the final four. But it's been a great story. I think they're getting respect. They're getting respect, at the very least.
Vancouver Canucks have been struggling as of late. We'll get into the we'll get into the injury issue coming up next segment when we talk about the Duncan Keith suspension. But do you have any concern about the Vancouver Canucks? 4-5-1 in the last 10, typical Vancouver Canucks fashion. They're talking about Alain Vigneault's job security, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, do I have concerns? Somewhat, just because, obviously without Sedin, that's a huge concern, because that totally changes the landscape of the playoffs. If you're talking about even with Sedin, they've cut it down on their third line scoring a bit. If they do get a Sammy Salo injury, there's concerns there. You always have your Luongo questions, so it's not without questions. Do I think they're the best team top to bottom when healthy? Yes. But that doesn't mean, what you're seeing in the NHL this day and age, you're seeing all teams have flaws. It's which team has the least flaws. Because, think about it, you're not going up against teams with like Colorado did when you had Sakic and Forsberg and Tanguay, and your top six was just lights out. And then you had Patrick Roy, Nett, Rob Blake, Ray Bourque, Adam Foote, all-star Olympians, all that stuff. These teams aren't like that anymore. So every team has some flaws, Vancouver, we just talked about it. What happens if Salo's hurt? What about their third and fourth line scoring? What happens if Luongo? Didn't they go to Schneider? Are questions raised, right? That's a question. St. Louis, will they score enough? Do they have enough guys counted to score? What about their bottom defensemen? Will Alex Steen be back and ready to go? Will those guys be healthy? You can only use one goaltender. Is it going to be Halak? It likely will. Almost certainly will. Yep. But you don't have the benefit of Elliott, like Phoenix did 2 years ago when LaBarbera played so well. That's great. But you can't play two goalies. So that value that you had throughout the 82-game season is no longer there. Detroit. Well, the injuries, Lidstrom is going to look the same. Is Datsyuk going to look the same? That's a question, right?
Richie, I'm a lot more concerned about the Detroit Red Wings right now than I am the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks, you lose Daniel Sedin, and that's huge because of the way he plays with his brother, especially, and he's one of the most dominant. The Sedins are one of the most dominant duos on the power play you know, of the last decade. They've always been good, and that concerns me. But they've got the depth. The reason why it concerns me more about Detroit, and it's more Lidstrom. Look at the defense. You take, I mean, Rafalski retired last year. You take Nicholas Lidstrom out of that lineup, and what he does, he's the real leader of that team. I'm more concerned about the Detroit Red Wings and him not being there. And we don't know right now. It's up in the air as far as those two guys. Right now, we don't really know. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be out? And we probably won't know. You know, closer to. I mean, Daniel Sedin. I mean, he took an elbow from Duncan Keith to the head. He has a concussion. I mean, that's scary. There's a possibility Daniel Sedin's done for the year. Possibly. It's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. We don't know, but we just don't know enough about headshots to
Lidstrom,
decide that.
Lidstrom, it's a lower body injury. So.
Well, Lidstrom's got a bruised foot. Yeah. I mean, and you know, the Red Wings seem to have expressed frustration, yep. And Lidstrom himself, I mean, they're not blaming him by any stretch.
Drew, remember what happened with Peter Forsberg with his foot? He had foot problems for years. So,
it's,
I mean,
different, but I mean, they'll shoot it up if they have to, and then obviously Ian Light looks a lot better when Lidstrom's there.
Yeah.
But you're also talking about Cronwall and Stewart and Quincy and Kindle and Brennan and Smith. You have a lot of depth there on defense.
What about the Pacific Division?
Well, I mean, Drew, we asked who do you think is going to make the playoffs. I said LA and San Jose, and I still stand by that. I think Dallas will squeak in there too, although Phoenix is playing well. I mean, I just don't see Colorado or Calgary getting in there. Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll see. But you know what, Drew? Every team has flaws. You know, are you asking who's going to win the Pacific Division? If this is anyone's guess at this point. I mean, 86, 86, 85, 84.
If you're Chicago's, you know, in the sixth spot right now. Yep. If you're Chicago or Nashville,
I want to play the team I want to play the least.
Yeah,
is LA.
LA over San Jose.
Yeah, because LA is better goaltending.
Okay,
and their guys, you know, Carter and Richards, have proven to be playoff guys. They can play really well in the playoffs. Justin Williams, a veteran team. Like, Doughty's played big in clutch situations. San Jose's crumbled and looks. You watch them play, and I've watched them play quite a bit this year. We'll talk to Drew Remenda in the third hour, but I've watched them play quite a bit. And the sense of urgency meter on a scale of 1 to 10 is at 3.
They're a vulnerable.
With 3, and it should be
they're
at 8.
A vulnerable looking team.
8 or 9.
How similar is San Jose and the Washington Capitals?
As far as being disappointments this year, well, both very similar.
And mentally, in the way they seem to be joyless when they play the game.
They're too methodical, I agree. I think San Jose is better, and overall has been better over the past few years. They've had a couple, you know, bad breaks to not make it. They've made it to the conference finals numerous times. But
this year, everybody's ripping Washington this year, but nobody's criticizing San Jose.
No, I agree. I think your point's well taken. Talent-wise has never been an issue with either of these teams. Commitment and overall heart's been a question. And you have to watch these teams to realize it. And you see it all you want, and we've been watching on TV all we want. We've seen both these. Now, it sounds like they look good here in person, but you watch. I mean, it's a point of, like, it's like a lack of emotion.
Well, Jets are done with Washington. Did they just go 4-1-1 against Washington this year?
Now, of course, Washington went 2-2-2,
of course, which is typical NHL nowadays. But, you know, 4-1-1 is a pretty, is a pretty good indictment of Washington.
Yep. You know what? It's every team. Every team has its flaws. You know, you have San Jose. Well, they could still squeak in and play St. Louis. And if you're betting, I mean, St. Louis is a favorite by what, 1 or 2%?
At most. I mean, it's
3 or 4%. I mean, they're not an overwhelming favorite.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Quick score update as we're dealing with the Western Conference. Calgary at Dallas with 7 minutes or 8 minutes gone in the first period. Dallas has a 2-0 lead on the Calgary Flames.
That could be huge because they play again Monday.
That'll be last race for the Flames if they lose. Yep. We should quickly mention, of course, that it was obviously terrible tragedy before the season, and they did honor Carlos Gratian's family before the game.
Today?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Didn't know that. So there you go, exactly. He was involved in the locomotive tragedy earlier on in the year.
That was the blog entry that we read.
Yeah.
That was regarding him.
Yeah, right? Exactly right. Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side, we're going to start talking about the Duncan Keith suspension and the issues surrounding that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.